Welcome everyone to this interview where I'm super excited to be talking with Dr. Elena Villanueva. Firstly, Elena, welcome and thank you for joining me.
So excited to be here, Alex. Thank you.
So in this interview, we're going to be talking about some of the ways that what's happening in our brain and our brain chemistry can be impacting the experience of anxiety. To give people a little bit of Dr. Elena's background, Dr. Elena Villanueva is an international speaker, health influencer, and co-author of The Longevity Code, and has been featured on multiple occasions on Fox News, MSN, Healthline, Houston Chronicle, Paleo FX, and many other stages. Dr. Elena teaches evidence-based approaches for finding and addressing the underlying causes of chronic illness and brain-related conditions using the most advanced evidence-based approaches available today. Her unique approach integrates the merging of science and spirituality and the integration of mind, body, spirit in her evidence-based approaches for healing and optimization of the human body and mind. Dr. Elena is the producer and host of the five-part series, Mastering Trauma Masterclass, and also the series Mental Health Masterclass, and is a recognized crusader, I like that word, for ending the global chronic illness and mental health crisis. So, Elena, I think a good starting point, that's how I'm starting most of my interviews, I think, in this conference, is when someone comes to you as a patient and says, I have anxiety, and it's crippling anxiety, maybe it's even panic attacks. What does that word anxiety mean to you?
Well, I think as a little bit of the conversation that you and I have had previously is that it's not super important, I don't think, what it means to me. It's what it means to other people. And it can mean different things, just like you and I very, very briefly discussed. But what I would like to do is kind of give some perspective on how it can be for different people. Anxiety, very generally, is a dis-ease in the mind that is affecting the body. It's causing a physiological response in the body of dis-ease, and that can look like many things to different people. For some people, they may describe their anxiety as being very severe, to the point where they're having a hard time breathing, they can't catch their breath, they're having panic attacks, they're in total fight or flight, right? Like, you know, really like unable to even function, almost crippling for them. And then other people can have anxiety where they just have a lot of like mind racing. They're having a loop going on in their mind all the time and they can't shut it off. That can cause a physiological response as well. It may not be one of sheer panic where they actually become dysfunctional, like not even able to move. It could cause symptoms such as adrenal fatigue, changes in their sleep patterns, changes in their eating patterns, right? It could cause like patterns of OCD where they have to like clean the house all the time. They get very upset because one thing is out of order, where when you unpack that, you find out that it's anxiety. And so really it can look a little different for different people, but the underlying issue with anxiety is that there is dis-ease in the body and in the mind. And it usually is the dis-ease starting in the mind, usually, not always, but usually it's starting up in the brain with the thoughts and then the emotions that develop from the stories, from the thoughts that we're creating. And then it creates a physiological, an undesired physical, physiological response in the body.
And what are some of the factors that tend to cause this imbalance or these imbalances in the first place? Like, what are some of the ingredients that come together to make up this experience?
There are, well, if we're talking about what is the underlying cause, what are the underlying causes of anxiety? Okay, so we actually teach on this and we like to break it down as simple as we can. There can be, we find through our case studies with the clients that we work with around the world, we're working with clients in about 18 different countries right now. And we find a handful of underlying issues. So I'm going to just kind of lay those out for you. The most common underlying things that we find. Number one, it can, believe it or not, it can be food. The foods that we're eating are either medicinal, they are in a neutral state, or they can actually be like a poison to our body, creating neurochemical or brain chemical changes in our brain that start creating looping thoughts, mind racing, all of these things, which then emotions get attached to those thoughts because those thoughts are undesirable. They become undesirable, which then creates this heart racing or this feeling of, you know, this anxiety feeling that a lot of people get familiar with when their body starts just feeling like this all the time. So food can be one of them. The next most common underlying causes are environmental toxins. Environmental toxins include chemical toxins in our environment, mycotoxins, which is toxic mold, heavy metals, EMF, like dirty electricity. Those things can create chemical changes in our body and in our brain chemistry. And I teach extensively on this to both practitioners and the public. We take a deep dive into showing all the research behind how these various chemicals, these various molds, all of these things, how they start changing the body and the brain chemistry that ultimately can lead to like a short circuitry in the brain, leading us into those looping thoughts, all this, you know, fear, all of these things, right? The third thing that we teach on is medications. A lot of medications that we take are actually known to cause brain chemistry alterations and short circuits, not only in the nervous system in the brain, but in the hormone systems of the body, in the metabolic systems of the body, and those things, and in, even in the gut. So we talk about medications and the gut in part three of our 5-part series. And we take a deep dive into teaching people how these medications can alter our gut and our brain engines, as well as other engines in the body that will secondarily affect the brain, causing anxiety, right? Even medications that are taken for anxiety, a lot of people are not aware that those medications taken for anxiety, like Xanax, can actually cause a bigger rebound effect with anxiety. And so this is why it's so important for us to really understand our medications and how to use them. They're designed for short-term use, not long-term. Then we go into traumas, unprocessed emotions and unresolved trauma, our belief systems, and this incongruency with our mind, body, spirit connection, that we forget that we are a spirit or a soul that we're borrowing these beautiful human physical bodies to have a human experience. And we forget that as human beings, we forget our true identity. And we have this incongruence. A good example of living incongruently would be like, we don't listen to our heart, which is our God self or our soul or our spirit. There's many different words for that, right? But I think we can all agree that we've all learned at some point in our lives that we are a spirit in the body, and our heart may tell us to do one thing, but our mind, our ego, which is very limited, our conscious mind, which is very limited in its knowledge and wisdom compared to our heart, to our spirit, our brain will tell us to do one thing, our conscious mind, but our unconscious mind is telling us to go this direction. So we end up getting fragmented over our lifetime, and we go into many parts. You know, we want to do this, but our actions and our belief systems are taking us in the opposite direction. So we become fragmented and therefore incongruent, and that can create a lot of dis-ease in our body that can ultimately lead to systemic engines, our physiological systemic engines, getting out of balance, and it can just make the problem even worse, and that can also cause anxiety. So there are a handful of underlying causes. What we see, Alex, is that most people don't just have one. They have a combination of all of them going on. And so unpacking it, taking a look under the hood and seeing what are all of the underlying causes that you have and to what degree do you have these different underlying causes, and then learning how to address them is what we are finding is giving people total resolution and healing from their anxiety, their depression, and their other types of brain-related conditions and symptoms.
So what I'd like to do is to dive a little bit deeper on particularly this piece around brain chemistry and some of the imbalances that can happen there. What are some of the key, I suppose how I'm thinking about it is you've got these different potential causal factors. How are you differentiating and deciding which of those are most important? And like particularly if there's imbalances in brain chemistry, what are some of the particular signs and symptoms there that might be different, for example, of something like repressed emotional trauma?
Well, it's not really different. But if I understand the question, let me just repeat it from my verbiage to see if we're on the right track here. You're asking how do we unpack that to actually see which ones are the causes and might be more the most important ones to address first? That's a great question. So using data-driven approaches, we can also call that evidence-based approaches, is what we have found is the best way to approach understanding which of these underlying factors are involved in a person's anxiety or brain chemistry imbalances that are giving them their various mental health related symptoms. And in the case of trauma and emotions, unprocessed trauma and emotions, we don't right now today, we don't have the technology to test you for that, to say, oh, this, you know, this test is showing me, you know, like in a lab test, like you can't draw blood to see that. However, all of the other underlying causes, whether it's food, chemicals, mold toxicity, heavy metals, all of those different things, even medications to a degree, and looking at your gut function, because your brain chemistry is made in your gut, looking at all of those things, we actually have a lot of testing now that we can actually do different types of tests to see, is this food causing a reaction not only in your body, but in your brain, altering or changing your brain chemistry? There's testing for that now. This is amazing. These are amazing advances because we didn't have this 15 years ago. We can test to see if you have molds and then we can understand, well, you know, mold is known to alter your body's ability to convert dopamine into epi and norepi. And so if you have mold, then you can have a buildup of dopamine. Too much dopamine really causes some massive anxiety, big time mind racing, right? It can also in its worst cases lead to people getting diagnosed with Parkinson's when it's not even really Parkinson's, it's actually a mold toxicity issue. So we can do testing for all of those things. We can kind of sort of in a roundabout way test for medications kind of, and that's more by getting a history and saying, you know, we can see like, oh, you're on this medication. Did you know that one of the big side effects is anxiety? How long have you been on this medication? Oh, so you got on this medication and then, you know, in 2015, and it was also in 2015 when you started exhibiting anxiety. Let's take a deeper dive into this medication that you're taking, right? So we can do testing. When it comes to anxiety being caused in part or maybe even mostly by unresolved trauma and emotions and belief systems that are just not serving us, that's where getting into a history and really understanding how unprocessed trauma and unresolved emotions and even belief systems can affect, and you know, our emotions change our body chemistry in our brain, in our hormones, every single thing. And so getting a good history, like doing the ACEs test, the adverse childhood experiences, it's just a written like 10 question test. It's not an actual test where we're taking any kind of blood or saliva or stool samples or anything like that. It's asking the right questions. And so by looking at those, we can, and then getting a really good history on when did this start? Not when did you get diagnosed? When did this start? Not when did it become debilitating? When did it start? And then looking at these timelines and seeing what's going on, sometimes we can see if there's one thing just really popping out even more than the other. So typically, like 99% of the time, we find evidence of all the underlying causes that are involved. But when you dig deeper and you ask the right questions and you look at the data that you can collect, sometimes we will see some things that really pop up. And we go, you know what? Wow, you have massive mold exposure here. And your ACEs score, your adverse childhood experiences, were a 7. And you just lost your father 5 years ago. So those three things are popping out as probably the most important things that we're going to deal with. We need to work with all of it. But these things right here, these are probably the biggest triggers happening for you. And so that's our approach that we use.
And I think what's also really important in what you're saying is when you're using a bottom up approach as well as a top down approach, is that someone can have a mental experience of anxiety, which is physiologically being caused and maintained in a sense. And you talked about the importance of digestion and gut function, but I know that also part of what you talk about in your work is leaky brain, and I think that's another interesting piece to bring in here.
Yes. So a lot of people will say that, you know, mental health issues, they'll go straight to the gut and go, oh, it's leaky gut. And some of them may say, oh, you have leaky brain. Well, let's talk about that for just a second. Yes, if you have leaky gut, you're going to have brain chemistry imbalances, because a lot of your gut, a lot of your brain chemistry is made in your gut. A lot of things are made in your gut, not just your brain chemistry. But brain chemistry, that's a big one. If you have leaky gut, you will also have leaky brain. There's already that connection that's been established. What leaky brain means is that the blood-brain barrier has been compromised. And so what the blood-brain barrier normally will prevent things from coming into your brain, like heavy metals, chemical toxins, you know, different things like that, bacterial that don't play well in our bodies, viruses that don't play well in our bodies. The blood-brain barrier is designed to keep that out, because it's an enclosed system. It's very selective on what it allows in. But if you have a breach in that barrier, you can have, like, for example, mold. Even if you didn't have a breach in the blood-brain barrier, mold will affect the gut directly, which will start causing these neurotransmitter issues, primarily with dopamine. But if you have this breach in the gut barrier for too long, it will eventually lead to a breach in the blood-brain barrier. So eventually you'll have not only leaky gut, but leaky brain. And now the mold that was already causing a problem via your gut, it's now able to cross the blood-brain barrier and double the trouble, then it's causing even more problems. And so what I like to teach people is, like, you know, yes, it's very possible that you have leaky gut, and very possible that you have leaky brain, but we wanna go deeper. What caused that in the first place? Was it the antibiotics that you started taking as a child? All the processed food you were eating as a child? You know, was it all of that stuff? So there, you know, we just want to take a deeper dive into that. So it's not the ultimate underlying cause. Gut issues and leaky brain issues is not the ultimate, it's not it's not the deepest underlying cause, because something else caused the breaches in those systems.
And you touched on it very lightly, but walk us through some of the things that may be. So you mentioned, for example, antibiotics, but walk us through some of the variables that could be causing that.
Okay, perfect. Yes. Leaky gut can even start from the time of birth. If the mother was pregnant and eating, you know, if her body was full of toxins, which women have an average, I just looked up the new statistics on this, they have about an average of around you know, 170 different toxins in their body, you know? And, you know, people, if you're hearing this for the first time, you might be thinking, oh my God, how is that possible? Well, our environment is full of toxins. All of your personal care products, your makeup, your deodorant, your perfumes, your laundry detergent, your dish detergent, all of the chemicals that are put in your house when you're building a new house, all of these things get into your body. And then when you get pregnant, then these toxins are going into your baby's blood, into your baby system. Babies are born with well over 120 different toxins in their body nowadays. I mean, it's crazy. And when you study the toxins and you see what they do to the body, this is why we have so many young children now having autoimmune disease. They're having autism spectrum disorder. They're having all these behavioral issues. You're having kids that are getting put on antidepressants from the time they're 5 years old. I mean, this is not acceptable. It's not normal, but we're having, you know, I talk about the increase. I show statistics in our 5-part series on all of this stuff, but babies are being born with this now. And so really it goes back to, as parents, we need to become aware of how, of all the toxins in the environment so that we can reduce our exposure, clean up our bodies before we get pregnant, so that when we get pregnant, our babies have a clean vessel to develop in. And then when we nurse our babies, that we're not detoxing through our breast milk, because that's exactly what happens. And we're not giving the baby even more toxins. So it can happen from birth. It can happen with their first set of antibiotics. It can happen with the foods that and the products that we're putting on our children. You know, a lot of the baby soaps out there, you know, look at the ingredients. If it's stuff that you can't pronounce, it needs to go into the garbage. You know, foods, you know, just all of these different things. There's a multitude of different things that can cause it. Now, we can't live in a bubble. You know, but we can reduce our exposures, and education is the first step. And then the next step, once we become educated and aware of where these toxins are coming from and what different issues that they cause in the body, then the next biggest step that we can take to bring about change is where we spend our dollars. Where are we spending our money? Stop buying those things. Buy the products and, you know, and the things that you need to buy to keep you and your family healthy, so that we can put those guys out of business. There's no reason to have things on the market, products on the market, that are making our water and our air and our soil toxic, things that are directly in our products that are making us sick. There's no reason for that. Other than you know, money.
It's funny what you say about if you can't pronounce it, don't eat it. One of the things I also say is if it's numbers, not letters, that's a really bad sign when it comes to food.
Absolutely true.
Also, you spoke to obviously there's certainly a place for certain medications, but I think also most people will be aware there's often an overuse of medications where, in a sense, I think part of what we're often doing is masking symptoms, right? Like we're trying to address symptoms without really looking at that deeper cause. The problem I think you're speaking to, though, is that apart from that, that's often not that effective. It can often then lead to more symptoms, and that it's almost like we're chasing trying to fix symptoms rather than getting to that deeper cause.
Yes. Well, you know what? It's if we take a look at our very broken medical system, our medical system is great at saving a life. I think we can all agree on that. I mean, our surgeons these days, they can literally take someone broken in 50, 60 pieces with lacerations into their organs, broken bones everywhere. I mean, everything, and they can put them back together. But our healthcare system is broken. It is a sick care system. The system that we've been using, giving a pill for an ill, or cutting it out if it doesn't work, it's broken. How do we know that? Because we can look at the statistics of how sick that we've gotten, not just in the United States, around the globe. The statistics are staggering. And we can see that, you know, giving the pill for an ill approach doesn't work, because medications are not designed for long-term use, and they don't cure anything. That is why once you get on a medication, you have to stay on it for the rest of your life. Now, in addition to that, I mean, think about that for a minute. Why can't you get off your medication? Because it's not fixing anything. It's altering your body to help resolve a particular symptom. It's preventing death. It's not curing you. And preventing death doesn't mean health. It does not equate to health. This is why when you start on one medication, usually within 5 years, you're on at least one more, if not two. Fast forward 10 years, now you're on 5, 6, 7, 10 different medications. Every medication that goes to market is known to cause at least two other conditions. And so where is the right time and place to use a medication? It's to save you from dying. But when you get on the medication, it's a life vest to keep you afloat so that you have time to then start uncovering what the root cause is, right? That's why we take the medications. That's how it should be taken. But our medical system has become very skewed. It's just become a racket, really, because it's all about profit, right? The pharmaceutical companies are really the ones telling the insurance companies and the doctors how to run their practices. And it's gotten completely out of control. And this is why, you know, medications are the number three killer of people.
Yeah.
Number three, right? And it's really probably higher than that. But those are what the statistics show. And so it's really important for us to become aware of that.
So coming back to what we've been talking about, we touched on in terms of neurotransmitters and some of the imbalances that we can have in our brain chemistry. How do we test for that? Like we've touched on, for example, mold and impact on digestion, those sorts of things, but I'd also like to zone in on this piece. And because I think often for people, that's one of the ways that the direct impact of all of this is actually affecting their mood, that there becomes these imbalances. So maybe speak to that a little bit.
Yes. So, interestingly enough, you actually can test for neurotransmitters in the traditional allopathic medical model that I like to call the outdated model in healthcare. They will deny that you can really test that, but yet their solution is just to put you on a medication without really knowing. It's a guessing game. When they put you on a medication for anxiety and or depression, they're basically guessing that you have low serotonin, and that's usually the first guess that they have. So they cover their, I mean, this is, they don't really do this, but this is pretty much in essence what they're doing. They're covering their eyes and they're throwing the dart on the dartboard, hoping that they hit it in the center the very first time, hoping that they hit the bullseye. And they'll say, well, let's start out with Zoloft. You know, let's start out with, you know, Prozac. You know, let's give you something to help build up your serotonin. And when that doesn't work, then they might try an SNRI, which is going to be really more focused on preserving norepinephrine or dopamine, you know, or then GABA. They're just going to go through the different medications. And so I find it very interesting that they'll be so quick to deny that a neurotransmitter test can work when what they're doing, that approach, I mean, is that really the approach that you want? You know, we see that when you do test for neurotransmitters, you know, it's a good idea to look at other tests too and like compare them against each other, along with looking at the history and the symptoms of the different, you know, of the individual, and kind of putting all the pieces together so that you can get an idea of, you know, are we seeing a pattern of a dopamine imbalance? And maybe it's not always, you know, a lot of people always are under the impression that it's low this or it's low that, like low serotonin, low dopamine. Well, when you understand what mold can do, causing toxic, very toxic levels of high dopamine, you know, it brings a whole new perspective to looking at neurotransmitters or even playing a guessing game. We used to do a lot of neurotransmitter testing. Over the years and with all of the data that we've collected, we rarely do it anymore. Why? Because we can look at the symptoms. We can look and see, for example, if the person is really having, you know, really like high mold toxicity, we can see how long they've been having their symptoms, And we can make a very accurate guess by looking at organic acids and looking at their other labs and looking at their symptoms without even looking at their brain chemistry directly. And we can go, you know what? This is a pattern of a high dopamine. We know that mold is going to cause that. And high dopamine can cause high anxiety and mind racing and sleep issues. Let's work on getting the mold out. And so we are not going directly after, well, let's try to balance the dopamine. How can we make the body break that down faster? Or how can we make the body slow down production? The body will heal itself. If you address and remove the barriers to the healing, the body is a self-healing mechanism. It's a supercomputer. It knows what to do. It's a conscious supercomputer. It's cool. Like, you know, we've got the consciousness and the supercomputer thing going on. You know, we've got the hard drive and the software working together. And if we just remove the mold, now let's see what happens to the body. Oh, the anxiety's going away now. There you go. Right. So yes, we can look at neurotransmitters, but we've come a long way in being able to understand the human condition and how it works. And so we actually rarely order neurotransmitter testing anymore. We can, but we find that it's just not necessary in most cases.
It's like you're testing another symptom as opposed to really looking at the root cause, right?
Exactly.
And what do you see as the role of genetics and genetic testing in all of this?
I love that. I love that question. You know, we have a whole section devoted to talking about genetics. And you know, I remember when I was going through my medical training about 20 years ago, 23, 24 years, actually it's been almost 25 years now. And we learned about the role of genetics back then and how, you know, like genetics could be a root cause. Oh, and of course we all knew that, oh, it's in my genes. My mom had it, my dad had it, whatever. Now we know that that's not true. Your genetics are never the cause. Your genetics are the keys. They're the keys, right? The keys to healing. One of the keys to healing. We have ultimate control over how our genes work for us or against us. Even if you have, because some people might be watching this and saying, oh, well, I have MTHFR. Well, we all have MTHFR. We all have that gene. Now, some of us might have a different variation of what that gene looks like, right? But MTHFR, you know, doesn't cause you to have a brain chemistry issue necessarily. It's the stress and the other triggers and the way you're treating your body, the way you're neglecting your unconscious mind, the incongruency, the fragmentation, all of those things will make your MTHFR gene work or not work for you. Meaning that you can either take that folate and or B12, in MTHFR, it's gonna be folate. You can either take it and convert it to methyl groups, which is then used in over 250 chemical reactions in the body, including making and breaking down your brain chemistry. You can either make that gene work for you or against you, depending on how you're living your life. Do you have unresolved trauma? Do you have unprocessed emotions? What kind of fuel are you putting in your body? What kind of toxins do you have in your body? Because when you put those, all those stressors compounded on top of each other into your body and mind, your MTHFR gene can't work for you anymore, right? And so other genes too that are directly related to neurotransmitter production, your MAOA, your MAOB, your COMT, your GAD, all of those genes that can help drive the production and or the breakdown of your brain chemicals, if they're not working for you, if they're working against you, what else are you doing? What are you doing with your mind, body, spirit that is not allowing those genes to work for you? And so once we understand that, we get our sovereignty and our power back. And we know that it's not happening to us. Our genes are not faulty. They know exactly what to do. It's the way that we're treating the body that's not allowing our genes to work properly for us. Now, understanding our genes can teach us more specifically and help convince us on a conscious level more specifically why we may need to eat like this instead of like that, why we need to address our stressors instead of allowing us to be in those stressors all the time, why we may need to sleep 8 hours instead of six. And so when we get the keys, then we can start dialing in So that we can get not just our cellular engines and our organ engines working for us again, all those systemic engines, but we can get those genetic engines working for us again.
Well, one of the things that you've touched on in a few different places is the importance of some of these fundamental lifestyle pieces, like what we eat and how we move. And so maybe you could speak to, like, what are some of the fundamentals to get in place, which are then going to impact these different processes and systems that we're talking about?
I love how you're bringing it down, making it really simple. So a lot of us have been, we've been conditioned to believe that everything is complex and that healing comes from the outside, that all of our answers to our healing, all the answers to our problems always come from the outside. The answers are within you. And the answers are always really simple. Now that, you know, we make them complex, but the answers are simple. Eat clean. What does that mean? Grow your own garden if you can't afford organic food. You know, if you can get a couple of chickens in your backyard so you can get fresh eggs and, you know, harvest your own chicken, like whatever, like eat as clean as you can. Get a water filtration system. Like we always recommend a reverse osmosis. And then you add your minerals back into it because it does pull your minerals out. So clean environment, eating clean, making sure your water is clean, making sure your air is clean. All of those basic things. What can you do to help clean up your air, especially if you're living in a toxic city, you know, where the air is very polluted? Then get a couple of air doctors or a good air filtration system for the different rooms in your house. Make those investments. Clean up your relationships. Clean up your mind. Our minds are so polluted with all of the programming that we've had since birth. You know, all of the things that we watch on television, all of the garbage that is just coming in from, you know, that is coming into us all the time. We need to clean up our mind. We need to learn emotional intelligence. We need to learn how to process and get the emotions out of our body. Because these emotions that get trapped because we don't know how else to deal with it, we shove it down, we get angry, and then we just kind of shove it down. Some of us will try to bury it in, and we'll become workaholics, alcoholics, like sexaholics, whatever, you know, we're like trying to bury it because we're not taught emotional intelligence. We need to clean up. We need to clean things up. We need to reduce our stress. We need to come back to what's really important in life. You know, we need to stop putting ourselves into massive debt. One of the things that delights me is that ever since COVID, a lot of people have had a reset. I have seen people moving out of their homes, selling their homes, buying RVs, going down into 400 square feet with their kids, starting to travel around the world. They're changing their priorities in life. We need to, everything that we've been doing over the last 60, 70 years is breaking us in spirit. It's breaking us in our mind. It's breaking us in our bodies. We need to abandon everything that we thought we were supposed to be doing. And we need to get back to the basics of simplicity and connection and having a clean environment and cleaning up our mind and becoming congruent and listening to our spirit self, which is our unconscious mind, which is already driving 95% of what we're doing. We need to reconnect to that and get out of our heads. And so without doing the testing to prove it to you, if you can do the testing and you can afford to work with people who are experts in this area and have guides, by all means, get the guides. It'll fast track your progress. But the simplicity of it is clean up your life. Become conscious of what you're doing and the thoughts you have, the beliefs you have, the emotions you have, and the actions that you're taking as a result of that. Become conscious of what you're doing, because you, if you keep doing the same thing, you're going to keep getting the end result. Become conscious of that. It will change your life. Get off the hamster wheel, make different choices, develop different belief systems. You know, those will give you different emotions, which will lead to totally different actions. And those different actions will lead you into different results.
It's interesting. I think often people think they need to have the really complex, nuanced, personalized protocols for things to change. And of course, as you say, they really have their place. But I think people often can be avoidant of making those more simple lifestyle changes because maybe it's because they devalue the importance of them, or maybe because sometimes it's easier to send off a test sample and take a supplement than it is to actually make those day-to-day changes. I guess I'm curious in your experience, how important are those fundamentals even before someone then goes into those more complex and nuanced places?
That is the key to healing, Alex. If you don't do those fundamental things, you will never heal. The lab data just helps prove it to you so that your mind, so our minds are out of control. We don't even know how to master our minds. Our minds are leading the way, and our minds are very, very, very limited in their wisdom and knowledge. Our minds only have the wisdom and the knowledge of what we have actually experienced in our lifetime. It's very finite. The power in our mind is super finite. It's the power that comes from here. It's your God power, the power that God has given you, or whatever you want to call it. It's that spirit self that has the knowledge. The lab data and the coaching just helps your mind to believe that it's true, because you haven't gotten control over your mind. You don't know how to control your mind has taken and run away with you. And that's why you're on the trajectory, getting the results and the reality that you currently have. If you're struggling and your reality is shit, and it's been like that, and once you become conscious that you keep having the same pattern over and over and over, that you're running in a loop in this broken program, as soon as you become aware of that, that's when you can have the power to understand that, oh my God, my mind has been in control and my mind is leading me down the wrong path. It's not only fundamental, this is essential. This is the key to healing. We just use the labs to prove it to you. And then the supplementation and the coaching, helps fast track it for you.
Yes. And for someone that feels like they've tried a lot of things, maybe their story is, I've tried everything. What is the potential for things to change? Because I think sometimes people can try a few things that aren't effective, they get overwhelmed, and then there's this kind of place of sort of resigned hopelessness they find themselves approaching things from. And I'm curious as to, from the lens that you're speaking, that the importance of these fundamentals, but also change really is possible. What would you say to someone that feels like that there's no hope, or they've tried everything?
I would invite them to reevaluate if they've really tried everything. And this is why, because you are not broken. And if that's what you believe, I would invite you to unpack why you have that belief system. Why do you believe that you're broken and that you're just not able to heal? There's probably something deeper there with a belief system, with some broken programming. Because your body will heal. Your body is designed to heal. You can heal. Now, if you've had a physical accident, I'm going to say this, even if you've had a physical accident, something that directly affected your brain, my belief system and what I've seen both in my own life and with our clients around the world, your belief systems are the most powerful healer. When you can unpack your unconscious programming that we're with the belief systems that you believe that you're broken, and when we can unpack that and find out where that's coming from, when you can change that, you literally can heal from your belief systems. You have the power to heal. I mean, look at Joe Dispenza. If you know his history, a lot of people are like this. He's just one that's very, very well known, right? That he had an injury to his spine where he was like paralyzed. They told him he'd be paralyzed forever. He learned how to go inside, override his brain, and he got his body to heal. And he's proving it. He's working with scientists and researchers all around the world, doing before and after brain scans on people, teaching them how to go in, reprogram the broken programming, and you can literally heal from the inside out with your belief systems and your thoughts and your emotions. And we are now just starting to get our very first data back on that, where we have people that have, for example, we have one client right now, she has Lyme disease, which if you know, that can cause a lot of mental health and serious physical health issues. On top of that, she's got some serious toxins in her body that are also known to cause damage to the brain and the central nervous system and other organs. And she's got mold. She's got all of those. And she's got leaky gut, leaky brain on top of that. She went through our 6-month mind, body, spirit integration program, which is our trauma and emotional release program. And when you look at her symptom sheet over the last 6 months, all of her symptoms have resolved 50% or more, and she hasn't even touched the toxins. That right there is proof that when you change your belief systems, which will change your emotions, and you get control of your conscious mind, and you start reprogramming yourself, that you can have the healing, even when you have these toxins in your body that are known to cause the brain chemistry issues. And so to somebody who thinks that they've tried everything and they can't heal, I would love to sit with them and unpack what those deeper belief systems really are, because that's probably their biggest barrier to healing.
Yeah, I guess really the challenge is if someone doesn't believe they can heal, they're then not going to do the actions or the interventions that might challenge and transform that belief. I'm mindful of time, but people that want to find out more about you and your work, where's the best place to go and what they can find?
Please visit our website at modernholistichealth.com. Check us out there. And we have these beautiful masterclasses that are 5-part series. They break all this entire discussion. It breaks it down. We take a deep dive showing the studies and the research behind every single thing that you and I have talked about today. And then on top of that, we show case studies from our own clients showing their before and their after and the healing that they've had. And if you sign up for our newsletters, then you can see whenever we are launching our 5-part series on trauma, mental health, neurodegenerative disease, and inflammation. And so if anyone is interested in taking a deeper dive, we are in the business of educating. Please come and hang out with us and let us take you on a deep dive so that you can really start understanding that you are not broken, that there are answers and solutions, and we kind of lay it all out for you.
Fantastic. Dr. Elena Villanueva, I really appreciate your time. And I think it's a really important message of hope for people. So thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you so much, Alex.